Today's episode of All Things MSP is brought to you by EasyDMARC. Go to atmsp.link/EasyDMARC for more information.
EasyDMARC, an email authentication and deliverability platform that helps meet and beat Google and Yahoo's requirements in just a few clicks. Easy implementation, smooth DMARC enforcement, smart monitoring and alerting. Everything you need in one platform with a team of experts ready to assist you at every step of the way. Join 70,000 domains authenticating their emails with us. Act now and ensure your important messages land in the inbox.
You want to talk about the TikTok ban? Like, what does that mean? What does that mean is this. Is the government doesn't understand what social media can be used for. They only think it's for bad, and that's because some of them are run by lizard people. But the other ones... I think TikTok's fine. I think the problem with TikTok, honestly, is that the government doesn't have any sort of control on it. And it's way, it's, a, I mean, look, in all fairness, my TikToks are like dad jokes, puppies getting haircuts, and food. So like, I'm really not one to talk. But I think it really is that the government doesn't recognize the freedom of speech that can be had on this platform. And I think that's what scares them. And I think that banning TikTok is not going to do anything, because I think something else.
Correct. It's the illusion that TikTok, because it's TikTok and it started in China, is inherently bad.
Right.
They don't have any more control over Facebook or LinkedIn.
Right. Yeah. And also, the American version of TikTok is run by a guy who's from Singapore. We've had this conversation. It's not even run. He has no connections. Well, at least he shouldn't have any. I'm taking it at face value of what he said at the Senate hearings. He doesn't have any connections to the Chinese government. So, like, if that is true and we want to believe what he says, not listen to whatever senator was grilling him on, did you have Chinese food today? Like, kind of level questions.
Yeah.
Obama put it out the best. Years ago, Obama had a thing where he was just like, it was to get people to vote. And he's like, do you want grandpa telling you what to do with the internet? No. Go out there and get new senators. Go vote. Like, that was the whole thing that he did. But that's kind of where I'm at with the TikTok thing. So, yeah, I like my TikTok. I'll tell you this much. I found my new favorite TikTok. I'll share this part. Yesterday, I was scrolling, and someone did a TikTok live, and it was just Winamp, like, playing awesome 90s techno music. And it was just Winamp. It was just a graphic of Winamp. And it brought me back so bad. And I literally commented, it kicks the llama's ass, which is what the Winamp slogan was. And nobody got it. And it made me cry.
Yeah.
Been an ear and ear and an ear.
Elevate your IT managed service provider business with SuperOps, the all-in-one platform that integrates RMM and PSA. Powered by AI-driven insights and automation, SuperOps helps you stay ahead, streamline operations, and boost efficiency. Are you ready for operational excellence? Find out more at atmsp.link/SuperOps.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the All Things MSP podcast. I am your host, Justin Asgar. With me always is my good friend, podcast producer extraordinaire, keeper of the pirates, Mr. Eric Anthony. Eric, how ye be doing today?
Just producing the pirate out of this thing.
Producing the pirate out of it.
Or pirating the producing. I don't know. Something like that.
Do you remember when the MPAA put out those like don't pirate ads? And then the IT crowd, which if you haven't seen, is a British TV show and it's amazing and you should watch it, made fun of it. And they were like, you wouldn't kill a police officer. You wouldn't then defecate in that police officer's hat and then bring it to the grieving widow. Don't steal movies. Like, it was like the funniest.
Now, because of copyrights, I couldn't put the actual clip that Justin is mentioning from IT crowd into the podcast. However, if you go and check out the notes for the podcast, you'll find the link to the YouTube video, and it is worth watching. Go watch it after you watch the podcast. Listen to the podcast, whichever you're doing.
Yeah, I think I still have some either really old DVDs or VHS tapes with that ad on it. Or like, it's not an ad.
Yeah, not the IT crowd version of the ad, but the actual ad of like, yeah, the MPAA, they mean murder. That was horrible. Let's talk about some other things that start with an M and end with an A. Mergers and acquisitions. We have a guest today. I love it when we have a guest. Mr. Adam Boris, VP of the Vista Business Group. What's up, dude? How are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm going to turn that as a hot mic. I apologize to our listeners. Adam, real quick, why don't you give everybody a two-minute spiel? Who are you? What's the business group? And that map behind you, how many of those places you've been to?
A number of them, actually, yeah. A world full of places. So 2 minutes on who I am. As you said, VP at Vista. We're an M&A group. We specialize in working with IT businesses. That didn't always used to be the case, but when COVID hit, and we had an MSP listed for sale, a restaurant, and an asbestos removal business, and it was very obvious there was continued demand for the MSP, and everything else fell apart. So like a hard shift. And that's what we focused on full time from that point forward. So,
it sounds like the start of it sounds like the start of a real good joke. An MSP, a restaurant, and that's this business are for sale.
Yeah, right. Yeah, good call.
Or walk into a bar.
Yeah, they walk into a bar.
Yeah,
the exactly. Owner of these three companies walk into a bar. They all ordered shots.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I want to talk a little bit about M&A. Full transparency. Adam and I have tried to work together in the past. He's brought companies that have potentially been interested in buying my company, but then they got to talk to me and I screw it up. Or I've gone to him and we've talked about potentially buying someone else. And I do want to mention real quick, we're not going to get into today, but there's an entire section on M&A in Mark Coatman's book. We've had him on the podcast before, MSP Secrets Revealed, episode 2. And yours truly is in there. Check it out on page 206. All right, enough of that. So let's talk a little bit, Adam, about what does it mean? Because people throw M&A out all the time, right? They, I'll get acquired, I'll merge, I'll do whatever. But like, I don't think people really understand the crux of what it means to be in a deal like that, in a merger and acquisition. Because I think a lot of people, especially MSP owners, think that you're just handing off a book of business, right? And like, that's it. Here's my contact list. Bye. And like, that's what an M&A is, right? Can you kind of go a little bit deeper into, you know, what kind of deals you've seen or how things have happened within the M&A, you know, between MSPs?
Yeah, you bet. So regardless of who the buyer is and regardless of what the business looks like, there's always going to be a minimum transition period. And for an MSP, that's, you know, 3 to 6 months for an average MSP. And you're providing a soft handoff of the business over to the new owner. Half the time people want to stay with the business, half the time they don't. For the people that are hearing that going, gosh, I don't want an old owner sticking around. Like, that doesn't sound good. It's funny. There's a lot of times, you know, people, they strike off on their own and they want to start their own business, and then they hire a couple people along the way, and then they look up and look around and go, gosh, you know, I have to run a business. That sucks. That's no fun, you know? And so and at the same time, they also have really strong, they have chops, right? They have really strong technical skills. So they're more than happy to sell the business and then stay on as an employee, assuming that there's good chemistry between them and the new owner. So it's about half the time people stay, half the time they don't. So and then as far as to your point, it is more than just selling the book of business. It's one guy's like, well. But if it's an MSP buying my business, they just need the client list and that's it. And they don't need my staff. So we can add all of their expenses, all of my staff expenses back to my EBITDA. And they're not going to have a need for an office because, well, they already have an office. Like, dude, no, not how this works. So they are buying the entire business. And regardless of whether it's an asset sale, regardless of whether it's structured as an asset sale or a stock sale, either way, it's the whole business. And so along with the names of the clients and those relationships, so too goes the employees and the rent and everything else, every aspect of it. So, and on the note about on the topic of employees, that's a logical concern that a lot of folks have is, well, what are they going to do with my employees once they take over the business? 90% of the time, 95% of the time, they're going to want to keep all your employees, unless you're grossly overstaffed, but they're going to want to keep your employees because that's the engine that makes your business run. And if you think about it, they're not going to be buying your business. Most of the time, they're not going to be buying your business if it's not already successful. Yes, there are the occasional people that all they're doing is looking for a broken business, but those are by far the exception, not the rule. So yeah. They're going to want to keep everybody in place as much as possible. So,
I can tell
you. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, no, it totally does. Thank you. I can tell you, like, we've acquired three businesses during the pandemic time, right? We acquired another Apple consultant. We acquired a training company and another Apple consultant who's also an Apple authorized service provider. And I think every time I did that deal, and again, full transparency, I did not do those deals with Adam. But I structure those deals differently every time because I honestly have no idea what I'm doing. And the amounts that we paid for these companies also were like, based on my own willingness to pay X amount of dollars, which I can totally understand as a buyer, what they're willing to pay. But like, I didn't even know how to evaluate these companies. So what, if someone's looking to get, looking to get bought, right? Because I've had people, once people found out that I was acquiring people, everyone under the, came out from another, I'll sell you my business for three times its valuation. I'm like, you can keep your $30,000, dude. Like, leave me alone. How does an MSP value themselves? And I know what you're going to tell me is there's a form and I should have filled it out, but I didn't. How can an MSP like quickly value themselves so they have an understanding of like where do they stand in the scheme of things?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. A shameless plug here. if somebody is thinking about selling, we're happy to put together a valuation for them. Again, if they're seriously thinking about selling, then typically we don't charge for that. But I mentioned that because, when I have conversations with folks, it's always from, 30,000 foot view. And we go from that getting down to real specifics with the valuation, but to answer your question for like a ballpark, so what drives the value for an MSP is 90% of it is your EBITDA. So, as your EBITDA grows, so too does the multiple, that goes along with your business. So, and when I say multiple for, in case somebody isn't familiar. So there's, you take your EBITDA and you multiply that by the multiple that's specific to your business. And then that's how you arrive at a total dollar amount. Right. So what drives the vast majority of the value is your EBITDA. And as your EBITDA grows, so too does the multiple. And that kind of makes sense because if you step back and think about it, a bigger EBITDA means a bigger organization. It's more of a well-oiled machine, and ultimately there's less risk there. And anytime that there's less risk for the new owner, then the seller can charge more of a premium, right? So that's why the multiple increases as the EBITDA does. So that's what drives 80-90% of the value. And then there's factors for certain things. And for MSPs, that's factors for what percent of your revenue is regular recurring versus projects and product sales. And there's really no like super important line in the hard and fast line in the sand, because every buyer is different. But you know, if you're at 50-60%, really like 60% is a pretty good number. That's always going to be more attractive than the business that doesn't have recurring revenue. And you can also go too far to the extreme on that too. Some folks, they think that it has to be 100% recurring revenue. And that's fine. But you know, if you take that approach, then that means you're passing up on free low hanging fruit. Get really easy product sales, really easy projects. And it also means you're probably turning away a project that from somebody that's not a client yet, that you know, and you can get your foot in the door with that new client. So,
yeah, we covered anyway. A lot of that with our pricing episode a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about doing MRR versus break versus hybrid. And I think things are,
yeah.
Okay, you've said EBITDA now 45 times. And I'm pretty sure at least 30 people who listen to this don't know what that is. Without being super accounting technical, what is EBITDA?
Yeah, it's an accounting figure that its purpose is to measure your net cash flow. So it's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And so basically, if you take your net income and then add those things to it, that's how you get to your EBITDA. And then there's also, when you discuss EBITDA, there's also adjustments or add backs is also what it's called. And so it's adjustments. There's like two main categories. So one is for personal expenses. If you happen to run personal expenses through the business for tax purposes,
no, whatever, do that.
Yeah. All right. those aren't real expenses of the business. And so it makes sense that you would add those back to your EBITDA, because that's not an expense that the new owner is going to have. But the rule of thumb there is you want it to be an actual legit personal expense, and not just like something that's buried in your financials where it says Costco, you know, $50 this month.
Right.
Well, what is that really for? You know,
$50. And then, I'm buying the chocolate chip muffins for the office, which, by the way, those are the best.
Yeah,
I've never gotten out of Costco for less than $100.
Did you buy the buy the chocolate chip muffins? Dude, they're microwave them for 30 seconds. It'll change your life. Anyway,
you're fine. No, I love Costco too. But the other major category of ad backs is one time business related expenses. So if you have my favorite example, if you redid the office furniture, you're not going to do that every year. You know, that's a once every 20 years type of thing. And so the new owner, they're not going to have that expense going forward every year. So it makes sense to add that back to EBITDA. So, right. So when people talk about EBITDA, it's the adjusted EBITDA is really, that's really the number that's important.
And so for a company, because we're talking about the valuation number for a sale, right? This isn't necessarily the valuation of how well your business is doing, right? Because it's a percentage, not necessarily a total grossed amount, right?
Correct. Yes.
I know I'm correct. I was just saying right, because I wanted you to pick up the sentence, but that's.
Not sure exactly the direction you're headed with that, but yeah. So typical EBITDA margins are with ad backs, you know, for a reasonably well run MSP, it's going to be around 20%. Not always, sometimes, but often around there.
And a quick break from one of our sponsors, GoZenta. Your computer should work for you, not you for your computer. goes into Tixt, allows you to communicate via text message from right inside ConnectWise Manage, speeding up time to resolution. Goes into connects your systems together to make sure you enter data once, and it goes into all the systems that it should. Find out more at atmsp.link/gozinta.
And then to pick back up on where we were headed earlier on the other factors for what drives the multiple for a business. So the first one I mentioned is recurring revenue. And again, around 60%, that's kind of an unofficial magic number. and then tied to that then is what do your contracts look like? Is it month to month? Is it annual? Is it multi-year? In general, the longer the better. And some folks, they really balk at that, have a huge pushback, and it's like, well, my clients don't. Okay, I'm just telling you, when you go to sell your business, there is a little bit of a premium for a business that has contracts. And again, the longer the better.
Well, it's funny you're talking about this, because a little while ago, I had someone come to me and they were interested in talking about a merger or us acquiring them. And I my first question always is, what's your monthly recurring revenue on contract? Right. And they go, well, we don't do contract. And I go, then your value is zero to me. And they were, I was being a little bit of a pisshand about it, but like, because obviously there's money to be had there, but like, I'm like, if you don't have anyone on contract, the value of those customers is tied to you, the person. And if you're looking to eventually get out, and even if we do 3, 6, even a year long, after that year, there's a chance that they're going to bail, because maybe during that time, you, original business owner, didn't do a good enough job to explain to them that I, new business owner, am bigger, badder, better. And therefore, they're still tied to you. That if in course of 12, and granted, obviously, there's a couple other pieces involved here, like it'd be on me or whatever. Yeah. But like the assumption is that I would be getting involved. But if they don't do that, let's say it's a short run, a 3-month run, I want to be out in 3 months. In 3 months, for you to tell all your customers, stop texting me, text Justin or whatever, like if that doesn't happen, they're tied to you. And therefore, if there's nothing on contract, and then you leave and then they leave, I now have just spent all this money on your business that I might be paying out over the course of 1, 2, 5 years, and I have no income from it. So like The idea behind clients on contract, and it's funny because we haven't really talked about the idea of contract length. We've talked about putting things in your contract and clients should sign a contract, but we never really talked about client length. And we all know that nobody was happy when Kaseya did their 3-year auto renewal contract thing. And everybody's like, I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to do month to month. But what you're forgetting is if you as an MSP want to do month to month, your valuation may not be as high as you think it is. Yeah. You want to say something about the Kaseya thing? I see it in your eyes, Eric.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that everybody has the right to do the contracts however they want, right? I think that in the way you execute them, the way you renew them, sometimes those practices can be predatory, but I don't want to talk about that.
Sure.
I want to talk about the fact that, yes, absolutely, the stuff you're talking about, correct. If you don't have a contract in place with those clients, there is nothing that says those clients aren't going to leave. It's the worst thing for you to do, to spend hundreds of thousands or $1 million or more on a business and have them all walk out. And again, like you said, you're left with nothing. That's what makes those contracts valuable. Now, the other side of that is contracts, depending on how they're written, are more enforceable or less enforceable. So you actually have to look at the quality of the contracts themselves. And the last word that I'll have on this part is that if you're doing month to month, you have to recognize what you're losing on the back end in business value and make sure you're charging more for it to make up for that.
Absolutely. From an M&A perspective, there's a couple points there. One is, it's not like it's going to quadruple or quintuple the value of the business going from no contract to contract, but it does move the needle. Like it does. That's just the reality of it. And really across the board, buyers say it in countless different ways, but ultimately it's reducing risk. Why? Because there's a higher level of, it speaks to there being a higher level of commitment that the client has with you as the MSP. So, and then the other part to that too is, you know, if the deal's put together properly, then, you know, you would think that the seller would work with you through the transition period. And even before you get to closing, hopefully you would have a good transition plan, at least a one page plan put together. Right. Yeah.
And then you should have something in the contract when you're buying them also about a transition plan for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, a lot of times there's performance tied to that. Right. And, you know, we started out this conversation in the beginning talking about how some owners stay on, some owners don't want to stay on, but it will reduce the risk if the owner stays on to make sure that transition happens in a more orderly fashion, because so many MSPs are small enough that the business owner is still the head technician, the primary salesperson. They're the point of contact. They're the main person at the company. And so if you don't solve for that, it can represent risk.
Yeah. What you brought up is, it's essentially, it's an earnout, and that there's different ways to make sure that the seller helps as much as possible. One of which being, an earnout. So an earnout, for people that aren't familiar, there's a couple main ways to finance the purchase of an acquisition. One is cash upfront. Another is seller's note, and then another is an earnout. And just on a side note, we typically don't see, we really don't see earnouts. It probably, I'd say for the average MSP, the structure, it's typically, it's like 85% cash upfront with the balance being in the form of a seller's note. And the seller's note is basically where, you know, you're playing banker to the buyer, and you know, the note, it'll pay out over the course of 3 to 5 years or whatever the two of you guys agree on. And then the third way, major component of financing that we see is, it's just like what you mentioned, Eric, it's the earnout. So, it's the earnout is very similar to, a seller's note, with the difference being that it's tied to performance. So it's saying, me as the buyer, I'll pay you X amount of dollars for the business, but this much is contingent on the business hitting these certain pre-agreed metrics. And again, we don't see that where we really see that is like, if there's a business that has a big client concentration, anything above 20% is considered big, but something real big, like 50%, that might make sense for there to be an earn out there. Or also if the business is really small, we see it in that situation too. One last thing about earnouts, like usually you want to tie it to, if you do have an earnout, you want it tied to revenue, because that's really the only thing that the seller is going to have control over moving forward. They don't have any control over how you run, what expenses you flow through there. So, I tell both sides, like, tie it to revenue, because it's the one of the cleanest ways you can do it. So,
I mean, look, there's a lot to unpack here when it comes to M&A, and we're not going to really get to all of it in a 25-minute podcast. So if you are thinking about potentially either selling or buying a business, please, you know, reach out to Adam. Adam, where can people find you online?
VistaBusinessGroup.com. Best way to reach me is to email me. And so it's AdamBorst@VistaBusinessGroup.com. So it's ADAM. BORST @VISTA business business.bunnygroup.com.
And just in case they don't know how to spell business, it's B-U. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, reach out to Adam. Talk about that. Like Adam said, you know, he'll do a free valuation of your company if you, and then potentially move forward if it's something that you're really interested in. Being if you're looking for growth, M&A is a great strategy for growth, for growing your MSP. I know many MSPs who have done that over time and have gone from, you know, $100,000 a year to $10 million a year just through these different methods. And it is a worthwhile avenue if it's something that you're willing to like pony up for and take on the risk. There is a definite inherent risk with buying companies, and you need to take that into account as well. Eric, any final thoughts on M&A?
I was just going to say, and because of that risk, don't do it by yourself. Because in full transparency, you know, to use Justin's words, I did not have Adam to help me with my transition. And so it could have gone better.
Yeah, it happens. Look, and that's the way we learn. And that's how we have stories to share with you here on the All Things MSP podcast. Join us at facebook.com/groups/AllThingsMSP. Watch all of this happen in real time and look at Adam's awesome woodburnt map at youtube.com/@AllThingsMSP. Follow us on all of your favorite podcast stuff. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/@AllThingsMSP. And please fill in our survey, atmsp.link/survey. That's it from us. I'm Justin. That's Eric. Bye.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. You can also follow us on Facebook, but better yet, go ahead and join the Facebook group. You can also follow us on Instagram if that's your thing. And make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at All Things MSP to catch us in all of our video glory. And last but certainly not least, if LinkedIn is your thing, you can follow us there as well. And a special thank you to our premier sponsors, SuperOps, MoveBot, Gozinta, EasyDMark, and ComTech. And we also want to thank our vendor sponsors. The All Things MSP podcast is a BizPow LLC production.